Check me out. Look. I know perfect time, it feels like I'm too late. And I know I'm still great in spite of my mistakes. You know it's authentic every rhyme I say.
What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? All right, I'm sitting here looking at the microphone and forgetting that I have to like look at the camera because it's been a while. Why has it been a while? We're not actually going to get into that right now, but definitely going to make sure we create space to like tell that story at some point. So why are we here today? Yeah, it's a loaded question that I don't know if we have all the time for, but in this conversation, having a conversation with my man, Craig Teedy. All right, so when I first met Craig through this thing that we'll talk about, which is Darden, he just had this like unique vibe, right? And it's not somebody that I like just always talk to, but anytime I engage with him, I get something of value from that experience. And one thing that we always try to make sure we do in this space is, bring conversations that with people that are really thoughtful, have conversations with people that are really honest. And selfishly, I get to have conversations with people that inspire me and that I look forward to learning from, that I appreciate learning from. And like, I get to like capture this and like have that, right? So I need notes because my brain works weird. So as we lead to graduation from Darden here in a few months, I wanted to say, hey, how do I make sure I capture these stories as much as possible before I am no longer with these people on a consistent basis? So now we're starting with Craig here today, but over the next few months here, I'm going to be amplifying some other stories of people here in this program that again, I continue to be inspired by, both through our podcast episodes as well as Athlete of the Week. Now that I've kind of brought you all up to speed enough to get to this point, I want to introduce my guy, Craig. Woo! Imagine like a crowd going crazy. That's what's happening right now.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I like Craig. I have in notes, make fake clapping sounds. Introduce Craig. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
It's great to be here.
Glad to have you here, man.
First time caller, long time listener.
I love it. Well, first of all, welcome to, the PTM fam. PTM is perfect time in multi-sport. Yeah, gotta like get away from using acronym. So welcome to the PTM fam, though. How you feeling today?
I'm great. It's Saturday. We're here in beautiful Washington, D.C. The Arlington side.
Yeah. I have in my notes about that because I was writing. I'm like, yeah, we're here in D.C. I'm like, we're actually not. And like, there are people that may be stupid.
We don't need to split hairs or get into geographic semantics. But there's some people who will die on the eastern shores of the Potomac for lack of an accurate pin drop.
Yes, that and like.
But you and I don't live here. Well, you used to live here, but
I did.
But you don't anymore. So we're totally exempt, I think.
So where do you live?
Currently, I just relocated to Boston, Massachusetts.
I love it. I remember growing up, play AAU, and like we had a tournament in Boston and AAU basketball. And we had a tournament in Boston. And I was like, I love this city. I got to get here. So haven't been, never lived there, but I love it. How do you like it?
It's growing on me. I'm getting used to it.
I love that.
I spent many times had gone there in previous professional capacities, just for kind of fly by night kind of whirlwind 24-hour kind of stints of duty. But I think like with any city, the more you spend more time and exist and live and breathe and kind of taste it, it kind of starts kind of growing on you in certain ways that you didn't think possible. It's sometimes subtle, sometimes not. But it doesn't really become a part of you until you kind of willingly let it. But at least you kind of like walk around, you can like kind of immerse yourself into things that our cities have and do, and it starts kind of unfolding itself to you. So it's like a beautiful fable.
I love that. And like you said, it's growing on you, so just giving that time, right?
Yeah. Like anything in life, give it time.
So question for you, you mentioned a little bit about us being here in DC. How are classes going?
good. I don't know how much your viewership has followed you along for your, you know, your heroic journey and pathway through here, but we are now kind of downshifting into the final stretch. So this is quarter nine. This is the second residency of the quarter. So it's going fast. I think faster than I think I would like at points, but you know, it's bittersweet. But I'm happy with my curriculum choices this quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I try to do a intentional kind of like less is more approach this time.
Yeah.
Instead of maxing out. So I'm focused on kind of two courses that I'm very fulfilled with right now. One of them is digital operations, and the other is entrepreneurial thinking.
I love it. I love it. I know our guy, Brett Titty, will appreciate you bringing that, like, what this quarter is, what that context is to the listeners. But so, yeah, thinking about that, like, that context, as Craig mentioned, him and I are here for, you know, this program here at Darton, and we do have class this weekend. And I know we've talked about it before, especially during the CEO leadership, you know, weekend leading to that. It was funny. As we were, like, finishing that, you and I, we were both getting our book signed. So I loved that moment. By
two Darton fanboys.
By Dean Scott Beardsley. So another thing we'll probably get into at some other point. But thinking of your journey, like, I'm curious, like, what brought you to Darton? Like, how are you here? That's weird. But like, what brought you here to come to this program? And also thinking of just level setting, tell them people a little bit about yourself. Who are you? How'd you get to Darton, and who are you?
Craig Titty, Sagittarius, green eyes. No, I think, in all intents and purposes, you know, I think my background, you know, I think like anyone else's, it's all its own kind of tale of, you know, kind of, you know, staggering genius as well as, you know, kind of heroic kind of, I don't know, iniquities here and there. But I think for the most part, I had kind of like a two-pronged, I think, career thus far. I started in earnest in the music entertainment industry, and then kind of segued into consumer marketing, essentially. And, you know, I think what initially, I think, brought me to Darton and to this room and to this pod right now in this meta moment we're having, you know, I think it wanted, it was like kind of a whirlwind romance with the Commonwealth of Virginia, first and foremost, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think secondly, you know, I think, you know, all these programs are so like, you know, especially like the top ones at whatever level, you know, whether you're doing executive, whether you're doing full-time, part-time, you know, it's still, you know, it's still a cross to carry for everybody. You know, you're still doing it and putting in the time and the commitment, you know, whether financially or, you know, emotionally, you know, psychologically, academically, vice versa, because you're putting your life, you know, on the line and your career on the line and, you know, also your relationships with, you know, family, friends, loved ones, partners, dogs, cats, whatever. And, you know, you have to be super intentional about it. So I think when I think hit the apex of, I think, you know, interpersonally and professionally and, you know, I think like a psychological reckoning of COVID, you know, I had kind of been, I think, toying with the notion or like the inception point of like, that's something you have to do. Cause when I left the music business and kind of, you know, quit cold turkey to some degree and kind of lit the match and, you know, watched it burn and walked away and kind of went into marketing side of things, I just kept realizing there was kind of a ceiling to that world too, to some degree, obviously, like
to the marketing world.
Yeah. Some degree. And like, I wasn't, I think of lacking, you know, a certain skill set, hard or soft. It was more just like, I saw kind of some white space. I just kind of felt that, you know, I could fill in some capacity.
And when you say white space, I just want to make sure I'm clarifying. It's white space, like within your own journey, right?
Yeah. I think part right. journey, but also part like, there was a certain kind of a divide or like a chasm that I knew that needed to kind of be bridged, you know, not from necessarily a skill set standpoint, but just like a wherewithal, like a confidence boost, an injection of like, you know, just different perspectives and like POV. Because I think in anything, whether you work in consulting or you're a dentist or a lawyer or, you know, you're a, you know, a vape salesman, whatever you do, you're always going to just kind of live within that vacuum or that prism of existence for so long, unless you kind of like take a minute to step out of it and look at it objectively. How can you do better in your job or your career and things like that? And, you know, I think it's agnostic of industry or profession. You just kind of like, you're like, am I doing all I can do? Am I doing the best I can do? Do I want more? You know, what do I want out of, you know, life or your calling, so to speak? And so, not that this is like the everything in the kitchen sink kind of fulfillment off the shelf solution, but for me, it was kind of this like, I think clarion call of like, I want to try to, I think, level up and try something else, but also just get into a different environment. You know, like the old adage is like, you know, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this isn't obviously to disparage any previous industries or rooms I was in. I kind of felt that some of the conversations were becoming like cyclical, and I wasn't feeling that I wasn't, you know, I was not, I don't know, challenging myself in some way.
Wanted to, not only that, like I like to think about my time here as like having this opportunity to really expand my perspective, right? Even if I'm trying to do a much better job at actually getting back into those rooms and connecting with my friends. But as I now go and connect with friends a lot more in those same rooms, I get to expand their perspective. Yeah. Right. While continue to expand my own. So I absolutely agree with you there. But even so, that's how you got here. And that's just kind of the philosophical piece of, you know, what brought you to this moment. But I am curious, how has the journey at Darden been for you thus far?
It's been good. I mean, it's been, I don't know. I mean, for lack of poetic words, you know, it's been, you know, it's been beautiful. It's been fractured. It's been formative. It's been fortifying. It's been harrowing. I don't know.
Did you say lack of poetic words?
Lack of poetic. I just, you know, I off the dome, my bars aren't as strong as they should be this morning. I feel like you and I are like in the booth at Hot 100. I'm just going to start like going goblin mode soon. Just someone's going to beatbox. But, you know, it's all the things. And I think that's, you have to give yourself to like, I mean, this isn't like a testament necessarily to Darden, but it is at the same time. It's like you have to give yourself to this experience, you know. And like I said, it doesn't matter in what format you're in or what time of life you're doing it. You know, you could be 25, you could be 55. Like, there's no better time but the time you make of it to do it. But you have to like be present. You have to like all the off the page and like off the clock extracurricular type things that come with this experience and this journey is like what enriches it, I think, the most. Yeah. You know, fully. Yeah. Like, not just obviously this conversation, countless other conversations you or I have with, you know, 130 other odd people that, you know, we've kind of like dived down this pathway with, you know, and those things kind of like crystallize into like this bigger kind of like kaleidoscope of, you know, for lack of a better word, a vibe.
Yeah. I love, like, we gotta make sure we have the hashtag vibe because we keep using that here in this conversation. But so absolutely agree with you there and on the vibe. I know that as you were trying to manage all these things while also making sure we're taking advantage of the vibe, there are difficult things that we navigate through these times. And I'm curious, like, how have you been hanging through some difficult times? What have you been doing to help you get through some difficult times while you're here on this journey at Dart?
I think, you know, for me, yeah, maybe it's, you know, it's a tentative, I think, just my DNA as a person. You know, one of them has really been, I think, entrenched for a while. It's, you know, I think it's personal, you know, health and wellness in some degree. And it's not just like exercise or, you know, kind of, you know, gym addictions. It's, you know, it's just, I think there's a sense of mindfulness and just like knowing when you're like,
yeah,
I mean, it comes with time, and some people just have better self-awareness, you know, than others, and you just have to kind of be honest with yourself. But like, you know, it's being, you know, mindful of the environments you're in, mindful of the situations you're in, mindful of those around you, and then, you know, take a minute to breathe. But, you know, I think for me, you know, the biggest, you know, kind of godsend or grace has been, you know, just like these weekends, especially in the, you know, the first, obviously, so six quarters where, you know, it's a pretty hard grind with back-to-back classes, you know, for like 3 days straight and, you know, obviously social events in the evenings and networking and all that stuff. So
podcast interviews,
you know, sport and social clubs, you know, 6 a.m. lobby calls for, you know, 5 mile runs to go visit Abe. We did. Yeah.
You were missed. I did not. It's okay. But so Yeah, I'm sorry. I was cutting you off. Yeah. So that
the thing is that, and then I think, you know, the thing, I think it's helped me a lot, you know, to be, I think, in this environment, this program, because it's like, especially as us all being, you know, for better or for worse, we're all consummate adults, even though, yeah. you know, at some days adulting is harder than others. But
oh God,
I think for us to all kind of come into this kind of like, you know, ayahuasca type atmosphere and like have this transformative, you know, kind of 2-year, you know, high intensity kind of, you know, burn and come out on the other end, you know, still like intact, but we're better for it, but we're totally hopefully changed and different. And, you know, we have something to show for it besides a degree, you know, there's something, there's obviously some other things we're going to take with it, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree there. I remember
but the empathy element is the other thing that's huge for me, like relating to everybody, because everyone's, you know, they do a really good job of, I think, curating, you know, the cohort, you know, to some degree. Obviously they bring people like you and I in, but there's obviously people from all these other walks of life and experiences and origin stories, and it all just kind of coalesces. But like, it's helped me to, I think, be a better listener.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely a lot of that LO and leader organizations and leadership communication class, like showing up, you know, in that conversation, in those words that you kind of share. And I remember one thing I always say when it comes to education, if you're in a program and you leave with nothing but a degree, you just wasted your time and money. So it's those relationships you build, that empathy you kind of begin to attain. And that perspective you're able to stretch is where you're really able to earn that return on investment, where you're able to get your money's worth, especially in a program like this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's that kind of, it's not, I hate to say the word currency, because it's not, but it is, it doesn't belie it, because it doesn't do it justice, but like,
yeah.
The point I make is it's not a transactional element to me, and I don't think it should be to anyone else, you know, per se, but this is like, you know, and this is a very, you know, like I said, an ayahuasca type moment. Like, it's very fortifying. Like, you see different sides of people, you know, through the thick and thin of what we, you know, we go through. We're not just here, like, in the classroom. We're obviously, you know, out, you know, doing projects, or we're, you know, doing global residencies, or we're, you know, we're doing events, or, you know, we're, you know, rallying around, you know, social causes as well. Like, things like that. And I think, you know, it engenders it to, like, getting to know people better, especially as adults. Like, I think I was trying to make that point earlier. It's like, it's not like we're all like, you know, 25 and spry and, you know, chipper about entire things of life. Not that none of us are not that now, but we just have a little more, you know, scars and bruises from life. And we just come into this, I think, with so many interesting takes on things, you know, whether they be, you know, they can be academic, they can be otherwise, but you learn and you give and take, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So thinking about learn, give and take, and even bringing back that like wellness piece that you mentioned earlier, especially since that's such a big part of this community, right? That athletics piece. So I don't lose it. I want to make sure I read it because I get distracted. So one thing that's helpful for me is the athletics that I was mentioning. You know, I love to move my body personally, and it tends to serve me as like this calibration for my confidence, right? So knowing that you're a runner, as we both do, you know, have done Dart and Run clubs, as you just mentioned, I'm curious, like, what is your relationship with running, and is that something you grew up doing, or is it something that you picked up later in life?
It started, I think, kind of as a matter of survival, or like, you know, not like, you know, in the wild type thing. It was more in high school, we had this like weird mandate or edict in the fall, you know, because like cross country is a fall sport.
Yeah,
you had to be in a fall sport, because I played in like the concert band.
All right. Band. What'd you play? What instrument?
Off the record, you know, I was a polymath. I'm a Renaissance man, you know.
All right.
But no, I played the trombone in concert band, but I played bass in the jazz band. So it was like, you know, business in front, party in back type energy. Like, I didn't really want to be in concert band in high school anymore, because I was like jazz, or, you know, starting my own band and, you know, playing in punk bands or something. So it's like, it was just a means to an end, because you couldn't just be in jazz bands. But the other complication to that, like, politics was then in the fall, you had to be in a fall sport. Otherwise, you had to do marching band, which was like the death knell. Like, I love marching bands, and like, I love college football. I love rah, rah, rah. And, you know, high school marching band was really good. And it's, you know, it's an arms race to be in those. but I just didn't want to do it. And so I did football for 2 years, and then, you know, like, there's that, like, that reckoning where, like, football becomes a super, you know, kind of intense commitment, you know.
You did football for 2 years.
Yeah.
I never knew that. I mean, would never guess. Not going to lie.
He could have gone pro.
Cool. Should that also be off the record?
No, that's fine.
Cool Craig, position.
Craig is a meathead. No, I was, I lost my ride. No. No, I think I played safety and.
I could see that.
Wide out. I just wasn't fast enough. It's, you know, not that fast muscle twitch kind of guy. You know,
I get that.
More long distance energy. So, junior, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not gonna be benching and squatting three times my weight. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but so I just switched to cross country.
Okay.
As a means to kind of negate the marching band conundrum, and then I went to undergrad and I just kept like doing it. And you know, it's just one of those things. It's like a healthy. I don't do it as much anymore because it's just, you know, it kind of takes a toll on your body if you do it for like so many years. And I think when you do it in college, you know, you're doing so like high mileage, you know, you're doing like 100-mile plus weeks for like, you know, 40 weeks a year. It's like, you know, your body's meant to do it at those peak, that like those ages, but like it's not healthy at the end because then your body, you know, your knees and, you know, your joints will just like come at you when you're in your 30s or 40s and be like, you're an idiot.
But and then, so yeah, absolutely. And I'm feeling them as I turn 37 recently. But one thing that you do really well is like balancing what you're doing as far as like not only running, but doing yoga, right? That's something that you've done really
it's
well.
Complimentary. I wish it was more in vogue, you know, when I was younger. But it was more like, you know, it existed only in like an ashram in India to people. It was not like a Western accepted. Yeah. I mean, it was around, but it wasn't as like ubiquitous as now. And I wish it was a thing because it would have saved me so many time and injury and pain.
Yeah.
I mean, recovery time too.
Even thinking about that recovery and thinking about like just navigating through that mental journey. Again, mention how, you know, athletics has just continued to help me navigate through difficult times personally. So what I'm curious about for you, not only what's your relationship with running, also pertaining your relationship with yoga, other forms of wellness, especially as it connects to athletics in some way. How have they helped you get through difficult times, whether it be while you're here at Darden or just in life in general?
It's just a good reset. You know, I think it's like, you know, it's like any metaphor. It's just, you know, it's part mental, it's part physical.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's also like, you know, the psychological and emotional aspects within the, you know, the mental. But it's just, I don't know. I think it's just, it's a pivotal kind of like, you know, pillar within, I don't know, at least my constitution of living.
Yeah.
I think right now and ongoing, I don't know. I don't see it changing. You know, I got to keep the dad bod off.
Got to keep the dad bod.
But I just, it's like, no, I said, I think but like as you get old, as I acquiesce into adulthood further and further, I think the delta of the 50-50, it turns more like, it's more mental than physical sometimes, you know. It might be 60-40 some days.
Yeah.
It might be 80-20.
Yeah.
But you just have to, like, it's like anything. You just got to put in the time, and I think you'll be better for it on the back end.
And another thing you mentioned throughout this conversation is, like, your relationship with art. Art being in the form of music. So, and for me, like, that same art, whether it be visual art, whether it be podcasting, right, storytelling, music, you know, it plays such a big role in my life. I'm curious for you, can you tell me a little bit about your relationship with music specifically? How'd you get into the music industry?
It moved me.
I mean, I know you did. Fucking Craig. I'm like, so I know you played in a band during high school, so I recognize that, but playing, like, I played drums in the Navy. I've never entered the music industry.
Were you in the Navy band?
I was, yeah.
Oh, wow.
8 years. That's awesome. Eight long years.
Well, you played the drum kit, though?
I play bass drums.
Oh, so Navy, like marching?
Or yeah. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank all you. Right. Humble brag. But but I've never, like, worked in the music industry, so.
Good. You're better off than I am, then.
How did you? That's another conversation for another time. So how'd you get into the music industry?
I don't have anything quirky or sarcastic to say, so I won't project. I think that the short answer is, you know, I grew up in Chicago and I wouldn't say I grew up in a musical family, but like, you know, my parents were, they were in like choir when they were like, you know, in college and, you know, concert band and they were like educators as well. And, you know, my mom taught music, you know, it was like, you know, but it wasn't like one of those things where like I grew up and, you know, my dad was playing Marvin Gaye records or Prince and we were just like vibing. It wasn't like that. It was just, they were like in more like, I won't say traditional, but like the concentric circles of like a very finite, like this is what we came from and we did. But I just got more into, you know, music, I think from that, like from their inspiration of like, oh, so you play in concert band when you're in elementary school and so forth like that. But then it's like, you start seeing like the weird kind of cultural stimuli of like, you know, stuff on the radio or things on TV, you know, back when like there was like, you know, traditional media of like MTV would play videos or stuff like that, like in the dark ages. And you would kind of see these like images of like, oh, that's interesting, that's very fascinating or cool, and like, not like I want to be that, but like, oh, I'd like to understand more of what that is. And then you know, I think also just seeing like the iconography of like posters and, you know, band or art, you know, records and stuff like that, like record stores, and when I was growing up and seeing those things and flyers. And
did you have Tower Records?
No, it was more like there were like independent stores like around where I grew up and stuff like that. But you'd always just see like this stuff and you're like, you know, it was like the chest, like the portal to Narnia or something. You're like, what is that world? Like, I don't know anything about that. Like, but it's like super fascinating from like a, you know, it goes back to the caveman era of like, you're just seeing like, you know, scrawling and drawings on a, you know, a wall. Like, what does it mean? You know, you kind of just want to dive in and understand it more. So it just became from, you know, curiosity and consumption. And then, you know, kept playing music and started playing, the bass and, you know, obviously you meet like-minded friends, you know.
At what point did you get like, again, going back to the high school, but becoming an adult, at what point did you get like serious about it to say, hey, this is essentially a way to,
I think the short answer is it was like a, it was a very backhanded marketing strategy to like promote and I guess get my band shows.
Got it.
And network and as using that as a vehicle. It was kind of like subterfuge and like a bit of kabuki, but like,
interesting.
It's weird. And now in the sense where like, you know, people I grew up with who are bands, you know, you feel like you want to like, you know, take over the world or change the world and be like, well, you know, this is my art, whatever, take it. And obviously they went on to do other things that are all, you know, consummate adults. And then I stayed in the music business. So yeah, I guess you could argue that I wasn't, but, but that was kind of how it jettisoned to me. Cause like, I quote unquote got my start working for a, you know, a pretty preeminent club in Chicago for many years. Like,
okay.
It was starting like when I was in high school, just like, you know, passing out flyers hand to hand and like doing, you know, flyer drops in the suburbs, at like skate shops and like, you know, hippie coffee shops, and becoming kind of like a groundwork, you know, kind of on the front lines for them to kind of establish like a marketing kind of initiative, like boots on the ground within like, you know, the collar suburbs of the city to promote shows. And then it became like a feeder for me because I knew like what bands were, you know, developing and blowing up and selling out, you know, VFW halls or like church basements. And I was doing my own shows too, like in the suburbs and like promoting them. And so
this is while you were in high school.
Yeah. And then like into college. And so
you did your own shows while you were in high school.
I was just an entrepreneur. I mean, I was
that's impressive.
Burgeoning businessman, fortune, -500.
I could see that.
But the economics were relatively like skeletal at best. You're paying for a sound man, you're paying for a hall rental, or if you were very had a charitable benefactor, they would give you the venue for free.
Yeah.
And hope no one would trash it or, you know, burn it down.
So it seems like, especially in the beginning, you had to do every job because you were you got your band shows, you know, you did your own thing. Curious, like, what are some of those jobs that you did over the years? Not necessarily when you were a child, because a teenager, because you did so much, but like as an adult, what are some of those jobs that you did
within the framework of the biz?
Yeah. Is that what I should say?
Yeah, I mean, I think
let me get my notes because I should write the biz.
I mean, it all, like I said, it all, it's a lot of like marketing 101. It's like, how do you build a brand? How do you get people to care? Like, you know, obviously write quality songs that people like, or, you know,
people connect to,
become affected by in some way, either repulsed or passionately, you know, endeared to, either or. And then, you know, try to get them to come see you perform live, consume your music in whatever medium is available, hopefully from, you know, they can monetarily incentivize to do so. You know, strategy, touring was a huge part of my life. You know, even when I was younger, you know, high school, college, you know, we would just, we were all still in school, so we would just jump in the van in the summers and just run amok and go all across the God's green acre and, you know, spread the good word.
Did you like know what you were doing at that time? Like, and
does anyone?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, when I
no, I mean, it's a little blind faith, but
you were doing so much. If you're a teenager organizing tours, like, that's fucking impressive. I'm sorry. Did you understand how impressive that was in that moment, or were you?
It was like a different. It was a different time. I mean, this was like, you know, like early internet like vibes, and you know, people had like, you know, AOL.com email addresses, or like, you know, Palm Trios or OG Blackberries, if that, or you're calling someone's like landline at like a Marxist co-op in like, you know, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and hoping that someone would pick up and be like, hey, can we play on Thursday in like 4 months from now? And they're like looking at like a paper calendar being like, I think so. Call back in like 6 days. And you're like taking a note being like, 6 days.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm saying that point is like there was kind of this underground network of like like-minded souls who were passionate about, you know, this, like, it wasn't really like confined to genre. It was just like anyone doing anything independently or DIY, you know, do-it-yourself mentality was like, you know, it could have been hip hop, it could have been punk, it could have been folk, it could have been, you know, just me with a bunch of like spoons and a banjo. Like, it doesn't matter. It just was like if you were out there trying to do it and kind of do your thing and you were on your, you know, doing it on your own accord and you had a vision for it, fine, find a place for you or find a way. But a lot of the thing that's really, I think, resemblant of that or a testament to that time is just like a lot of those relationships forged in those, like, you know, those times have like still people I like will keep in touch with or see, because you just, you have this like Jedi mind trick kind of like energy of like, yeah, that's like the part of, it's a community, you know, for better or for worse, you know, it's not like we all have like secret tattoos and handshakes. It's just something, you know, we did and that's who we are. And, you know, a lot of people have gone on to do other things in other industries, their world, but some people are still in that space, you know.
Yeah.
They might be managers, they might be, you know, they might own venues, they might be promoters, they might be lawyers, you know, entertainment, you know, focused, things like that. But yeah, you're booking these tours and you're just like, it's blind faith, but it's like, it's part like summer camp. You're like, let's go out and just have fun kind of vibes. And
I love that.
And you're just doing it, but there was a intentionality. You're like, let's, you know, because we only had a couple, like the main rules, because we weren't really making much money, is like, you know, keep the expenditures as low as possible, you know, make sure that the overhead costs, you know, were manageable but not Herculean, rely on the kindness and charity of friends or, you know, family for like places to stay, things like that, you know. So there was like a very specific kind of nuanced approach to the operational aspect of it.
Yeah.
So that was a big one.
I'm curious. Being in this, like, following up with that question, did you know what you were doing? So having that frame of reference in mind, and now being in this program where you are receiving a lot of like that operational kind of knowledge and knowledge in a really at a really high level of marketing, what is some advice you would tell that teenage kid that's organizing those events? Although it's for free, I mean, for fun and for free, most likely. Like, what is some advice you would give that kid?
You know, I think you only know what you know when you know it. You know, it's like a bad, you know, precept. But in the end of the day, as you look back, you know, everything's like 50-50 hindsight. But I think you have to just be more self-aware, but you have to be more aware of, like, where things are going, I think. You know, not just, like, from a technology and innovation standpoint, like, especially whatever industry, and music is, you know, changes a mile a minute every day, you know, especially from like the digital side of things, you know, consumption and, you know, consumer behavior, things like that. But those are all heady buzzwords I didn't even have a understanding of or knew that they existed probably when I was younger.
Yeah.
But I would also say, you know, and it's still to this day, but like, yeah, follow your heart and do what you love, you know, not that you'll never work a day in your life kind of thing, but like, I think that's kind of also what, you know, grounds me being here. It's like still, you know, we're all trying to find, you know, what we want, or, you know, some deeper truth, I think, in process mm-hmm. that, you know, sometimes we're ready to confront, sometimes we're not. But I think for me, it was like, that's just stuff I was passionate about. I liked doing it. I liked writing music, performing. I liked, you know, building relationships and cultivating, I won't say a business, because that's like, at the time, that would be very, you know, sell out and like against the principles and the ethos. But it was like brand building and building a brand, building a business and like things like that. So those things were formative. But I think understanding, I think, how that stuff scales and knowing how things can ladder into bigger things, and don't think small. Because especially when you come from like an independent, like underground, you know, sort of punk kind of, you know, ethos. I think years prior, I mean, it's like, it doesn't exist anymore, but there was like this very taboo concept of like, you know, I think like it was called like selling out or like being too commercialized or something like that. And at the end of the day, it's like, I never really subscribed to it, because I was like, art is art. Like, you know, like it could be a pop song, it could be some obscure, you know, underground kind of like, you know, Tibetan chant. It's like, mm-hmm. everything's called the even keel to me, you know, it's all just expression of something of a culture, of a time and place.
Art is art, and even thinking about like the not selling out piece, it's like, yeah, you want to that advice part, you want to
don't be afraid. I think that's the subtext, I think, mm-hmm. for me too. Like, don't be afraid of like what you don't know. Like, fear is kind of the biggest enemy, I think, you know, of like, oh, if we do this, are we going to like lose our street cred or like things like that? Because I think, you know, when you're younger, it's like everyone's in bands and you're all friends, but like it's still kind of an arms race. Like, are we going to be successful? Are we going to be able to, like, you know, are we going to have to get jobs? Like, you know.
And that's what, like, this idea of selling out, which isn't true. It's like, how do you gain more distribution? How do you expose your art to more people? That's not selling out. You have this really important kind of narrative that you know can shift the world through the form of art. How do you expose that to more people? And so thinking about like, you know, that form of distribution, exposing and not being afraid, feel like you did something during this program that was crazy. Mm-hmm. I use wild to describe it here.
W-O-W?
Wild. Wild. I mean, it could be a wild. As people hear this, they're like, oh, wow, he did that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was pretty wild. So you managed a tour, a world tour, while you were here at this really difficult program during a really difficult time, because we were still in like the... Damn.
It was still core.
It was, thank you. Yeah. I'm like, what is the language? I want to forget about that time.
If you forget, you can't graduate. Like, it's in your diploma, like sleeve. It's like, here's the acronyms you go to the grave with.
So, yeah, like, how'd you manage that? What was it? Bring people up to speed. We got time. All right. What was it? How'd you manage it? The floor is yours.
All right. So, obviously still working in the music business, you know, I have continued to kind of consult and kind of keep a foot or a toe, you know, in the lukewarm waters of the biz, just to, you know, because it does drive me. It is a passion point. But, you know, it's like getting back with an ex or something. You kind of keep her at a arm's length or a psychological distance that's healthy for both of you, you know, because, you know, you don't want to go back into slip into past patterns kind of thing. Because I also knew I wanted to do other things. But, you know, I've tried to always keep an open door kind of policy with clients or people that I like to work with. And, you know, one previous client was Anderson .Paak, and, you know, on his ascent in like 2017 on the Malibu record, that's when him and I kind of our worlds collide and we started working together. On that cycle, and so we kind of had.
How'd y'all meet?
Through a mutual, like, I have a friend who was managing or on the road managing him, and he had a last minute conflict. It was a really
interesting.
It's a really insane story, and I can show you the deck for it because I made it, I think, for my business school apps.
Yeah.
of like just showing like leadership under crisis, or like, you know, like. It was like, you know, in the back you hear like the Eminem's 8 Mile kind of like crescendoing, and like Craig's like telling the story as I'm narrating the context. But my friend had a last minute conflict or like a personal emergency, and I was living in Chicago. And, you know, we've been friends. We quarterbacked a lot of interesting projects together, you know, like events, you know, for agencies. We've done tours, you know. We met on a Red Bull tour. We did that, you know, when I was touring with DJs and we produced stuff. So, you know, we're like brothers in arms in that sense. And so, like any, if your good friend calls you, I need a favor. So I got this call, and it was like an evening, and I'm in Chicago, and, you know, I was, you know, in between. I was freelancing at the time in the, you know, in the marketing industry and kind of was like loosely working with one other music client. At the time, but you know, I was kind of otherwise just kind of not doing anything at this current moment in time. And my friend called me, like, it wasn't even that. He was like, it was like a weird text. He's like, hey, you know, what are you doing? Can you go to the airport like in an hour or two? And I was like, okay, you know, what's up? And he was like, I need you to go to Montreal tonight. I'm like, okay. And it was like some, it was giving like Jason Bourne energy at the time. And I was kind of like, but I didn't ask questions. And I was like, it's fine. You know, because it's a friend you trust, like whatever you need, but as long as it's not illegal.
You have this mission if you choose to assign.
Yeah. So like, you know, I obviously go to my freezer, grab my three passports and my clip. And, you know, I throw my Hermes, you know, weekender bag together and I get in an Uber. But no, so he keeps sending me some details. He's like, I have a last minute thing. I have an emergency. I can't make the show. And he's like, I'm out with Anderson .Paak and the Free Nationals, and I need you to basically, you know, tour manage. We're headlining Montreal Jazz tomorrow night. Wow. And I was like, okay, you know, chill scenario. Well, because they're headlining, the record was blowing up, and they're just, you know, it's like watching a comet, you know, like about to hit, you know,
so
the moon or Earth.
Excuse me, was this? I know Anderson .Paak through Tiny Desk.
Yeah.
Was this before or after Tiny Desk?
That was like right after.
Okay.
Because he did it like in the spring, and it was just like, this was like July like 7th of like 2017.
So people were aware of him.
Yeah, like they were beasting in the underground, as they say. Or, you know, like he was already working with Dre, and, you know, he already had Venice was already out before that, you know.
He'd been
doing the work, and, you know, he did the time, and the band and him were on fire. They were like, you know, really good. They were super tight.
So you got thrown into the wolves.
Yeah, thrown into. He's like, you know, so can you go? He's like, you know, because they were finishing the night before. They were in Quebec City with Kendrick, you know, you know, playing in front of like 100,000 people.
Wow.
And so, you know, of course, they're just like, hell yeah, keep the energy going. We're going to Montreal Jazz Fest, which is, you know, a preeminent large scale cultural like tent pole event in Montreal, and it happens every summer. It's like a 10-day, you know, cultural, civic, musical kind of just culture clash within city streets.
How old were you at this time?
Old enough to know better.
That's real.
Young enough to pretend that I could, you know, pull this off. But it was like fine. So I get on the plane, I go straight there. They were still finished show, so he's like, he just basically sent me all the directives, like, you got this, it's no big deal. And I was like, okay. But I was kind of like just, I already knew the record, so I was kind of like brushing up and understanding what's going on, like understanding through. Because like one of those, when you get those instances, it's like you need to understand like a couple things. One is like, what's the event? What's the show? Who are the stakeholders? You know, involved. You know, which is like obviously a large scale promoter, large scale production team. You know, various people that are doing, you know, technical roles, you know, on and around the performance space that you need to work with, which can range from like 10 to, you know, 50, 60 people in a, you know, any given event like that. And then understanding, you know, the band, not just like, you know, emotional like intelligence and like psychographics of who they are as people who have never met, and going into this like intense weird situation where they're headlining one of their bigger festivals ever, and I don't even know them. And I'm just like, you know, I'm like Craig from Friday, like, you're like gonna get fired on his day off kind of thing. So, and then understanding their crew who's with them, you know, because like obviously tour staff, you know, there are a certain profile of people that are, you know, interesting and unique, you know, salt of the earth individuals. But we have, you know, I obviously come from that world too, but I try to not be, you know, traditionally, like as one would assume. I'm try to be more complex with layers like an onion. But so I just had to understand who all these people were. I have to meet them all like in the morning when they get off the plane, and then we have to just like hit the ground running. So I'm like drilling down on like I got the contract from the agent quickly sent to my inbox. I'm like going over this and like realizing if there's any like red line items that like the lawyer crossed out, or any issues of like, you know, production stuff and things like that, you know. So doing all that recon, got like a couple winks of sleep, and then I meet them like literally in the morning. They pull up and, you know, a couple fist bumps and like a high five, and then
did you know any of them?
No.
Wow.
I mean, mutually, I knew some of the crew on their team,
yeah,
like just through peers and stuff like that.
But you'd never worked with
them. I'd never worked with them, like never had an IRL kind of engagement. And
now
so
you have
just
to come in and manage them.
Yeah. So, and it's intense too, because like they're all, you know, they're like going 0 to 60, you know, career wise, the band, and, you know, crew is obviously aware, you know, because the microscope on them, because these shows have to be like polished, super buttoned up, like no errors, because, you know, everyone's kind of, you know, I would say lives depend on it, but like, you know,
livelihoods.
Yeah, there's a spotlight. So, you know, but long story short, that's kind of was how it came to be. You know, Anderson pulls up, gets out of the van. He's like, hey, are you Craig? not in the Friday voice. And I meet the other guys, and they're all amazing, remarkable human beings, though a slight bit crazy at the time. And
yeah,
we had a great performance and pulled it off. And then like, lo and behold, then my buddy called me the next day. I heard it went well. Congrats, man. You know, kind of like, I knew you know, it was great. He's like, the guys like you too. That's like, you know, you clean up well, you know. And then the weird thing was I kept filling in for my friend because he had other conflicts that summer. And he was like, can you just kind of take over the reins and like finish out the summer with us?
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing more festivals throughout Canada. We went like, you know, all the hot spots.
Yeah.
And then we jumped on with J. Cole. Wow. At the end of that summer, and did his tour, which was really interesting because I knew his record was kind of blowing up too at the time, and it was an interesting tour because we were supporting too, because like when you go on those tours, like the bigger, you know, arena type tours, and you're opening, you're kind of like, you know, you're like lower on the totem pole. Like, what?
Was this Friday Night Lights, J. Cole, or
the one where he like wore the Guantanamo Bay like jumpsuit and was in like the boxing ring in the center of the thing?
All right, gosh, I should like.
I forget which record it's like, but it was 20. Yeah. It was 2017.
All right, I need to know that for myself. Yeah, yeah. I will add it to the show.
But it became. I kind of became more of a J. Cole stan after that tour. Just because, like, not just because you're like, you know, sharing the same venues and, you know, breathing the same air as them, you know, him every night. You're just like, you hear the music. You're like, okay, yeah. I get it. You know, and that's the kind of thing. It's like any art or music. If you don't understand it, go see it live. You're either gonna hate it or you're gonna fall in love with it.
I love that. I'm going to see Pink Sweats next week for Valentine's Day, so nice. I'm excited about that with Danny. So getting back to the question though, because leave it to me, we will be on a completely different topic.
Yeah.
How'd you manage
being that relationship I think was fortified and kind of proven that, like, you know, under those contexts, you know, I was, I guess, like willing and able for the call of duty if needed, and, you know, him and I became just trusted, you know, partners, Anderson and I, you know, and we stayed in kind of working partnership for the better part of like another like 18 months from there. We basically worked up and through on and off consistently for, you know, all through the end of 2018. And then 2018, he was switching management teams. And so like, it was basically kind of like, and I was taking a new job. I finally got like a job. I was working with Beats by Dr. Dre, and I was kind of like, you know, I was like, I got a real job. I'm like corporate 9-to-5 guy. I'm like, I'm not doing this no more. But we finished doing a couple of really cool things in 2018, like his charity event, which is really remarkable charity called Pack House, which he does every year. We did it last year.
Okay.
So if I could plug that, it's a very good 501c3 that he advocates for, you know, basically an arts endowment within the community, because he grew up in Oxnard, California, just north of LA. And so he does it as a means to try to provide, you know, a platform for, you know, kind of grants or scholarship for kids to study music or provide, you know, arts opportunities. Like he had a partnership, I think, with like Flea for his Silver Lake Music Conservatory for like, you know, kids to get lessons, things like that. Just trying, because, you know, he wants people to be able to, you know.
Is that like a global nonprofit, or is it just predominantly
it's focused on the West Coast, but it's obviously, you know, you can interact with it, you know, virtually or digitally, but, you know, it's a platform that he really rides for, and I do too, because I've seen it grow, you know, exponentially, like, you know, since I did it. We did one in 2018 in MacArthur Park in LA, just west of downtown. It was bonkers. You know, we had like an insane, because it's all people come out, and he'll do like a show. He'll have, you know, vendors and partners, sponsored partners to give, you know, gifts and donations to the community, you know, like Vans, Uber, like, you know, I forget who else they had, like North Face. Last year they had, I forget a bunch of other people, but it's a great opportunity. So we did that. We did Stevie Wonder's like holiday, you know, concert, and then, you know, all these things. And I was like, bye. So I didn't talk to him. And so we reconnected last year, and his team, he has a project called No Worries. I would say a project. It's basically one of his first.
You said No Worries?
No Worries with an X, yeah. And it's him and the producer Knowledge, who's kind of like this really amazing kind of, I would say, millennial, like Dilla. Mm-hmm. Or like Madlib,
okay,
you know, Pete Rock kind of energy.
He's
a savant. He's a remarkable creator, producer, just polymath, renaissance man. And so him and Anderson get together and it's just like diabolical levels of, you know, kind of cool creativity. But they hadn't really touched, this was like their first, this was like, Anderson was still focused on solo stuff, and then I think Knowledge was like, I'll remix one of your tracks, and they just hit it off when they were younger. And they put out a record in 2016, which is like cult.
Okay.
It's like, you know, kind of SoundCloud era vibes, like people love it, like Jay Dupre, he talks about it all the time, and I'm like, I didn't know he was ahead, you know, but some people know from that era, but this group, No Worries, has not been touched, you know, since 2016, give or take. I think they did a couple shows with like Earl Sweatshirt in a van.
Yeah.
On the West Coast, and that was it. They just like, you know, shoved it because Anderson was like, I got to focus on my next solo record. You know, let's keep it, you know, we'll keep the lines of, you know, comms open if we want to keep working on stuff. And then over COVID, they did a track with her, which had, you know, some good reception. And then they were like, well, might as well just see if there's, you know, some gas in the tank and let's try to like do it live again. So that kind of like they hit me up and would you do it? And I'm like, yeah, the thing, you know, like dot, dot, dot. But the thing is, and then I like explained the school thing. And it also took like some, you know, consideration on my part too, because obviously my main priority, you know, my number one bay is Darden right now, or it was at the time, you know. In addition to me kind of pivoting and career pivoting, I was kind of just being mindful and intentional of like, is this gonna serve me right, you know, right now kind of thing. And I obviously wanted to work with them and, you know, support this in this tour, but I had to kind of give it a think, you know, to like, just make sure it, you know, it wasn't really about like a job and just getting, you know, getting paid. It was more just like, is this gonna ladder into like, you know, the best version of me kind of thing? And am I gonna be able to like manage it all with school and all this other stuff? So I think after that, just realizing it was kind of like one of those dare to be greats and like you can't like, you know, let it get away kind of thing. We decided to do it. I decided to do it.
I heard this quote recently, said, don't let school get in the way of your education.
Yeah. And that was definitely true. Cause at the end of the day, it was like one of those things where it was like, I'm not saying it's once in a lifetime, but it was like, I appreciate him and his team being like, you know, Craig's the guy for this. Let's do it. You know? And it was good because it was a very condensed kind of like tour routing and cadence where we did it in certain legs, did Europe or Asia, and there was a gap so I could kind of come back for OGR and, you know, experience all the splendors of Arlington, Virginia.
So you one end, you had a purpose, you had a plan, and like that purpose and plan helped you navigate through that.
Yeah, and I think I went into it too with a better intention because like I said, I think like if you're in any industry, you get like just burnt out and bogged down. And like, I think like anything, it served me good when I've gone back into, you know, touring or music projects is just having some time away and some like psychological distance and like, you know, some growth, I guess, or like a better perspective. And it made me come into it not being like a pretentious, like I'm getting an MBA, I don't need to be here. It was more just like, can we do this better?
Yeah.
You know, not can we, you know, I wasn't dropping buzzers. Like, can we synergize? Can we optimize? Can, you know, it wasn't that. It was more just like,
can't use efficient though.
Can we find the accounting principles to be more truer?
Yeah,
probably. But it was more just, can we do this better? And can we, like, a lot of those soft skill things really came into play.
Yeah.
You know, from like LC and all those things that like, I always tried to practice in theory, but I never had like whatever framework or, you know, names to call certain concepts or ideas. So now it was like a lot of those things that used to probably stress me out or drive me wild, I was just like more even keeled and kind of nonplussed about it. And I would be like, okay, well, there's, you know, one of two or three ways we can approach this, you know, in my mind. Everything was just like, there was always like a strategy or like a backup plan and a backup for the backup plan just to make sure that things were working. And that's, you know, and especially in like touring, that's just like, that's just how it has to be, you know, and in business, you know, it's like, it's a microcosm for anything else, like in the world, in the business world, because you have to have a strategy to pivot, you know, on a dime, and you need to have a backup plan for that backup plan to ensure success, because that's how it is. But it all turned out well. I think the record's cooked. They're going to drop it at some point, hopefully.
But the tour went well. So I'm thinking, transitioning to another question. No, I need to read this because I want to make sure it's right. As I mentioned, music is another thing that helped, you know, me to just navigate through my own feelings. It's just like, music is definitely a really powerful tool, right? A tool that many use as a source of entertainment And when listening to your Spotify playlist, which I'm absolutely plugging, so I'll make sure I put that in the show notes so you all can go go like one of his all three of his Spotify playlists. But especially if you're in Darton, don't have a question in here. Absolutely plugging Darton Dank. We need to figure out. We need to get more songs.
Well, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was public. Damn, I got to go back and check my privacy.
It is not going to be private because it is now.
Cat's out of the bag.
The cat is out of the bag. So
call that a soft launch.
So in preparation for this conversation, I wanted to like get into your head a little bit, get into your head and like listen to your playlist and understand what feelings I had when I listened to that playlist. So some of those feelings that came were healing, joy, and connection, just to name a few. My therapist is gonna appreciate that because I use like the mood circle, and she's gonna be like, Michael, you did a great job. So plugging her. And as someone that's built a life centered around music, how has this source of art influence your life?
You mean in terms of like things that I try
just
to find
beyond
current?
A job, like what are some things you've learned that you have been able to take and to say, damn, I learned this thing within the art space, but it's showing up here.
It's the thing. It's like, I think it's funny. You've caught me on like a good day, not a good day, but just like, I think like anything in life, it comes with perspective and like reflection and intentionality. And I think I heard a good conversation because the Grammys were last week, and you know, all my hardcore industry heads, you know, were in LA, you know, reveling, and I wasn't there. And you know, not that I had FOMO, but I remember talking to someone, like it might have been through text or even a quick call, and he made this like assertion. He was like, the music business, it's like 90% relationships, 10% work. And I was like, but you realize that 10% is like you just like delegating someone else to do. And he was like, right, that's true, but like you have to know who to delegate to. And I was like, oh, that's fair. I think in that sense, you know, it's also, you know, it's metaphorical for anything in life, especially in business. It doesn't have to be music. It can be transcendent of that, and it's industry agnostic. And I think that's something that's paramount to Darton and to like an MBA community. You know, these relationships are near and dear, and they should be, and fortifying. I'm not saying like, you know, we'll all like, you know, be at each other's wedding or all be like, you know, golfing every weekend till eternity or something like that. It's not necessarily the case. It's more just like, you know, there might, you know, someone, you know, a call could come in years down the road and they'd be like, oh, I'll take that, you know? And yeah, it's just kind of like, it's like a weird oath, you know, in a sense, and a commitment to that. And I think that's kind of analogous to my experience within the music and entertainment world, you know, where it's like relationship driven. And obviously not every relationship is perfect by any means. It all takes time and ability on both ends to really work at it and get it right, you know?
I mean, that's shown up really clearly for you by getting that phone call. Well, not only with that initial phone call from your friend, but also that follow-up phone call from, you know, Anderson to say, hey, we've built this relationship and you've shown up in a really powerful way, and we want to make sure we continue to expand upon that.
Yeah, and do things that, and you know, like I said, anything, just like if you're going to do it well.
Right.
And do it to the best of your ability. Like, yeah. No, like, and also, too, I think the last thing is like, nothing is ever perfect, and that's the beauty of art. It's supposed to be fractured and sorry if I say fucked up, but it's just supposed to be raw, you know. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. In the age of AI, we have all these discussions like, is it going to take our jobs away? Is it going to do this? Is it going to end culture and society? And like, inherently, yes, it probably might. But the biggest concern I have is like the comment that like Will.i.am made is like, it was Will.i.am and then like Keanu Reeves, I think, or Billy Corgan. Somebody said like, it was probably Billy Corgan, which is his POV, but I totally agree with him in the sense where he was like, one of my favorite songs, and this is like, you know, dusty head stuff, but I like Joy Division's Level Tears Apart because it's such a, you know, a very, you know, kind of dark and brooding, but it's such, it's a very beautiful, twisted love song in that sense. But like the point I'm making is, and Billy Corgan makes, is like, you're not going to get art like that through AI. Like someone has to feel and experience some twisted, you know, gut-wrenching pangs of some sort to make something like that.
Absolutely.
And it might not be a perfect, you know, 8-bar pop song that you liken to like on the radio that's, you know, trending, but it's like something that you know is like authentically and like unabashedly raw and human in nature, you know.
Right.
And that's one thing I think that 100%. Art brings to life is that it should have that raw element of like imperfection, you know, and that I think can be translated into business too. Like nothing is perfect, but you have to try to like make sure it's as best it can be.
Yeah, 100% agree. I know we're approaching the hour mark, and mm-hmm. I will say that we are going to go over the hour. So
we can cut it in post.
Yeah, we'll make it work because I do have some questions okay. that I want to make sure that I get to here before we jump into rapid fire questions. So to bring this conversation back to the topics of athletics and mental health, I'm curious, like, what are some of your goals? You mentioned just this song, so you actually, this is a really great transition. You know, what is another go-to song you have, not only in life, as you just mentioned, to get through a tough time and also like a tough workout? Like, so what's a helping me get through a moment, helping me get through a workout? And it can be the same one you just mentioned.
No, that's not like workout material. I really like, all right, so workout context and then just like a vibe context or just like a feel good energy? Is this like what's the last song? What's your requiem going to be at your funeral kind of like energy? Like,
so, you know, just getting through, I'm painting this, giving you this context so you can paint the picture on your own and make it what you want, right? Because as you mentioned, it's art, it's meant to be imperfect.
Yeah.
But just like, if people are here listening, struggling through something, and like, it can be like that last half mile. It can be going into finals and they have those last 2 days before we have to submit finals. What is that song that helps you get out of your own head, finish that half mile, get out of your own head, make sure you turn that final in the last 2 days? I'm trying to bring it to context in some light, but something that just helps you get through and end the moment.
I wasn't prepared for this one. Usually I have like a Desert Island jukebox ready to go. My full disclosure, like my workout playlists are usually, they're pretty primitive. It's either going to be like Detroit techno or like Berlin like energy, like Berghain at 5 a.m. type of like, you know, just intensity, or it's like just punk or hardcore music. Like that's just kind of what gets me through. Like I can't do anything like under like 100 BPMs.
Yeah, I get that.
Like that's just kind of like boilerplate. I think for me, like a song that just always kind of it's this palate cleanser, and this is like really bizarre and esoteric, but it's a time and place where I remember seeing, because when I used to tour with DJs, I toured with a Quebecois DJ named A-Track for a while, and he had friends, you know, with all these great French DJs. There's one French DJ named Busy P, who's a Parisian DJ who owns a label called Ed Banger Records, you know, like put out records by like Justice and a bunch of other cool French guys who smoke cigarettes and wear leather jackets and are much cooler than you and I. But Busy P, this guy Pedro, he's the DJ, I remember he played in Amoeba Records in LA once, and this is probably like 10 years ago, and we went to go see him. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, a great DJ is one who reads the room and reads like the ethno, you know, psychographic kind of energy. It's like they're like a sociologist, and you're also mindful of your environment. And he's a French guy, like he's cool as hell, and he just knows like, you know, deep house and like really cool, like, you know, Parisian kind of funk. But he played America's Horse with No Name to close his set out, you know, in front of like a bunch of cool like hipster kids, and it was like hands down the coolest thing I've ever seen. But it was an Amoeba, and everyone was like, you know, kind of losing their mind before, and then he just like stopped and he's like, "This is my last song," and dropped, and it's this very like, it's, I think it was a 70s song, so it's a very plaintive acoustic kind of intro with a guitar,
yeah,
and then it just has this really sing-songy, beautiful like hummy melody in the chorus, and it's just, every time I hear that song, I think of A, that moment, then B, I just think of like me, you know, walking out of Burning Man with no shoes on with a horse in my hand, you know, like his reins in my hands and just walking into the sunset kind of thing. And it just zens me for some reason. But like,
I'm like picturing this in my head. It is so clear.
But that song is like, I think that's the best example I can give of one that's just like, it's kind of like a vibe shift if I need it. And I just turn it on. And but it can affect me in like a deeper, somber kind of like, this is a heavy moment. It might get heavier for like, we're going to build into the bridge and then the chorus, but then like once it awakens and crescendos to the outro, you're going to be a better person.
Wow.
It could just be like a great road trip song, but that's the one I always come back to, that one.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So thinking of something that you always come back to, shoot, even like keeping on in the context of like art, mantras, anything, we can argue that anything is a form of art. Mantra is absolutely a form of art because it helps you navigate through a difficult time or just an exciting time, whatever. So curious to know, what is a mantra that you have, and what is the mantra that you have? And if people don't know what a mantra is, what do you say to yourself when you're stuck in your head?
I have two, and one of them's like PG for this platform, but it was a guy I used to tour with. He was like a really grizzled, like amazing old, like rock and roll, like Oracle guy. He was like this 300-pound Texan, and his name was Spider.
Spider.
With a Y.
Okay. All right. I'm like, where's the Y?
But he's a remarkable man and figure. But I toured with him when I was really, you know, much younger, and he was one of those guys who just like instill kind of fear with you. But he had all these amazing, you know, mythical tales of a world of music I just will never know, and you know, yeah, the gilded era of just, you know, like Spinal Tap type stuff, and you're like, okay, cool. But he always had a saying, because he'd had an amazing life, but he was always like, is the blank I'm getting worth the blank I'm getting? And you can fill in those, it's the same word. Yeah. But and it was a very like at the time it was kind of like, okay, cool. But then like he would say it to like everyone else, like in the band or crew, would be like, you know, having a tough time, is your girl giving you a hard time? Like, is the blank worth the blank?
I mean, you
getting?
Can say it.
Yeah, I'm a gentleman, I won't say it. But he used to say it. It was like, is the fucking I'm getting worth the fucking I'm getting?
Yeah.
And it was very interesting.
I thought it was the shit I'm getting worth the shit.
No, and
I'm
you
getting.
Can cut it, but he would say it in any context, being like, oh, bad day at the office. Like, look at, like, we're out here, you know, putting on concerts for thousands of happy people every night. Like,
yeah,
fucking like shrug it off, like, you know,
let
it go. Or like, hey, you're having, you know, domestic problems at home, like your girl misses you, like she cares about you, she knows you'll be home soon, kind of thing. Like,
right,
he would like turn on a dime, he'd be like telling these crazy stories of insanity, and he'd be like,
Spider with a lie.
And then he'd be like, is it worth it?
Yeah.
And if it is, then no, it's going to be better. And then I think the other one for me is just, I think, you know, this too shall pass, and that's come into vogue for me, I think, more, you know, recently, in the last, like, probably since COVID, just being like, you know, there's certain things you can and can't control, and you just kind of need to cede your lack of control and just accept that.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. So, beginning to wrap up, as we think about like getting through a difficult time, you know, we're a few months away from graduation, right? I know you talked about some things you were doing as far as the tour. Some other projects that you're working on. But I'm curious, like, what is next for you? What are you hoping to do as we approach graduation? And then as we graduate, what is going to be that next thing for you? Or just what are you excited about?
I'm going to spontaneously combust on the lawn in Charlottesville after I receive my academic accolades. In lieu of a very protracted and poetic non-answer, as I think my colleague Elena Pearson would say, I talk very circular. So I don't want to do that. But I think, you know, the short answer is I don't have an answer. I'm just going to keep moving forward, one foot in front of the other. I think I'm still kind of in a career transition and kind of evaluating. I think what I want to really, I think, you know, push myself towards and commit to and be very intentional about those decisions. Obviously want to have a, you know, a career that I think continues on from where I've kind of come from and, you know, cultivated, but leveraging, I think, that experience in the most impactful, but also like purposeful and something that kind of fulfills the passion point, you know, like, like anything, it's like everyone has to make that Venn diagram at some point. You have to really make sure that like the passion, the purpose, and like the center point is going to be fulfilled, you know, and I think that's something we all kind of have to struggle with to some degree. So I'll do that, and then I don't know, we'll take it day by day. But you know, I think I've been really leaning more into the present, especially these last couple months. You know, I don't want to be like too stressed on the horizon. I don't want to be like looking in the rear view either. I just want to like, you know,
yeah,
have my arm around, you know, the moment.
Yeah. No, absolutely agree with that. And don't know where else I can go from there. So first of all, before I even jump into these rapid fire questions, just want to say thank you for sitting down, having this conversation and sharing your story. And I know there's a lot more that we can dig into, and I hope people find ways to connect with you to do that. But before we close, it's cool if I ask some rapid fire questions.
Of course.
I know you're a philosophical person, so share as much as you want, but understand that these are meant to be some quick responses and things. For starters, this is going to be dropping on President's Day, if you didn't know. Who is the president that you remember most?
Like during my life?
Yeah, yeah. And I use that language really intentionally because it's not who is your favorite president. But like, as you think about, and I'm giving you more time so you can think through that. You know, we are obviously at UVA. I'm actually not going to influence you, your perspective, by giving you any context because I've given you enough time. Who's the president that you remember?
I think touch points, it's probably gonna be more Clinton. I think just because that was like formative as I was growing up. And like, yeah, it's not just, you know, scandal, but it's also like,
It's part of scandal.
Yeah. But iconography of him playing an alto sax and wearing like sunglasses, like wearing Wayfarers. You're like, that image is like somehow like, you know, embedded in my brain forever of like this 90s cool that like we'll never get back economic. Yeah. And now I look back as like a well-heeled NBA student being like, damn, 90s were good. What happened? And it's like, okay, halcyon days. But I think, yeah, it's definitely the Clinton era in the sense where like, you know, because when you're younger, you kind of see these things peripherally and like, oh, I don't understand what it means. But like, you still have these images of time and things that are happening in the world and being like, okay, well, that was that era.
Yeah.
You know?
I love that. All right. So went on tour. And we've also talked about like just different countries you visited. So two, I'm going to give you the opportunity to hear both questions so you can understand them. Both, what is your favorite country to visit on tour? And what is your favorite country to visit when you're on your personal time?
That's a good question. And for tour, you know, obviously the criterion for tour versus personal are entirely like black and white. You know, tour, it needs to be facilitative because, you know, ideally you'd have a day off in this town and you have resource to, you know, either it's a nice luxury 5+ star hotel with great Wi-Fi, farm to table fixins in the room service menu, you know, a steam room, a nice minimum, you know, 1500 square foot, you know, gym, hyperbolic chamber, a lap pool.
Just the basics.
Yeah, some nice incense burning in the lobby. It has to be accessible to great food. It has to be accessible to like culture and things like that. Like some of the worst stuff, I mean, this is domestically too, like the worst part in like touring is sometimes waking up in like, you know, the most savage environment and you're like, oh cool, like I'm in a Walmart parking lot and there's like, you know, a Holiday Inn and a Waffle House and like a sketchy bowling alley. And it's like, okay, I mean, it is what it is, but like, that's a very Americana example. But like, I think for me, and this is, I think, reflective of this last summer and this last year, it's either I like, and this is, I'm not a big lover of London, but like on a tour, I would love to go to London if we're like centralized, we're staying in X and Y hotel and I can walk to X and Y places I want to go to. And it's totally utility and clutch and great. And I think number two would probably be Paris. Mm-hmm. Those two.
That's so Paris. London.
Paris tour. And London would be like a Paris. Tie for tour, and then like for personal.
Yeah, I love that.
Does it have to be
also? Is there to have a so I know I feel like. I know that when you said X and Y Hotel, that it's actually not the name of the hotel, but that seems like a pretty cool name of the hotel. You think about Moxie, you can call anything anything. And yeah, like,
that's probably a hotel brand somewhere.
We may have to edit that out. That may be something we work on. But so personal time.
Does it have to be a place I've been to?
It's art. It's whatever you make it. Like, why should I limit your artistry?
My mind. it's hard because I've been to a decent amount of places, but it's like there's the places I actually want to go back to. You know, it's like a video game. Like, you got to go here, you got to go here, and like see everything before life is over, kind of thing. But like, I'm not a big fan of like repeat patterns. You know, like I like to kind of keep on keeping on and see stuff I haven't seen. But, you know, one place which I think impacted me, and this is a testament to this program, was Mendoza, Argentina, this fall. Like, I've been to Buenos Aires before, but like we went to Mendoza, and it was just, you know, it's remarkable. It's very breathtaking. Like, obviously, like beautiful vistas and mountains and wine and all that stuff. But just, I don't know, it engendered itself to like a very, you know, those kind of mid-range size cities. You know, like not huge, but not tiny. Like, it just, that's kind of like the right comfort zone. But I would say that was some place I really love to go back.
Wow, I've not been. So Mendoza, Argentina. Last few rapid fire questions before we wrap up. I know we talked about like favorite song to work out to. You said 100 beats per minute. Now getting it specific, what's the favorite song to run to?
Can I grab my phone?
Yeah.
I just listen to so much shit, man. And it's like, I'm not an influencer by any means. Obviously I like weird stuff that I like, but I try to obviously expand.
So as you look for your song, can we get like, I'm making a request on behalf of the community.
Yeah.
We deserve, my voice is rattling, that's how you know it's real. We deserve for you to add a fourth playlist that is public, that is at least 10 songs that you like to work out to. And if you give us the permission, we would love to add to that.
Okay.
To help you build that.
An organic collective?
An organic collective. So the call to action, fucking Spotify, y'all owe me a check. if you have Spotify,
send me the 1.5 cents now.
Like, if you have Spotify, make sure you search Craig and get, I'm going to put his link in the show notes, get on him, follow him, and then make sure you follow those playlists, like them, and he's going to add his workout. Add your song. Also, if you're a Darden, we need to add to that Darden dank. It's 3 songs on there. We need more dank.
Actually, yeah, because I'm going through my workout playlist now.
All right.
Because like I said, it's like it's such a weird mix mash. But I think the easiest one to say, and this is like, it's just like a go-to because it's like a banger, but like, I like Music Sounds Better With You by Stardust.
Can you play a little bit?
It's like,
is that allowed? I don't know.
The licensing will catch it, but you. But it's Parisian house.
Okay. That's a vibe.
But it's Alan Brax, it's like French dude, and then Tomas from Daft Punk, and they did like a low key like, you know, like single.
Yeah.
Under a different like moniker. Yeah. When it came out, but it's just like a timeless tune. But it's like also just kind of like a vibe enhancer too, because you're like that like key strum is just so iconic.
Yeah.
That sample.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's one.
So thinking about running, the last rapid fire question we have. So for people that don't know, Perfect Time at Multisport started. It the foundation is through triathletes. We like to get into other forms of athletics, moving, but the foundation is the foundation. So we like to finish all of rapid fire questions with, if you had to kill one, kiss one, marry one, swim, bike, run, what would it be?
That's a good one. Swim is like, it's not my most proficient. That's why I'm not like award-winning try.
Yeah, and it can be like just swimming for vibes. Being in the, let's reframe, because we want to give people that are not triathletes more.
I mean, being a Sag, you know, like the water just is not, it's not my sign, but I like to give in, you know.
Yeah.
Drip emoji, but I would definitely, I would, but it's, you got to conquer kind of what you're not good at. So like, I would kiss swimming, and then what was it, cycling?
Bike, being on a bike.
I would kill that, because like I'll do spin class, but like,
yeah.
I'm still quote unquote riding dirty in the sense where like, I don't want to give in and like be the guy in spandex going to the fucking coffee shop after like a 30 miler and be like, look at me, like, cool.
It's I'm
like,
100% that guy.
I know there's nothing wrong with
like
it.
Offended.
But no, I'm just not A, ready for the aesthetic, and then B, yeah. I don't want to, like, biking's expensive.
It is expensive.
Like, running's the broke man thing, but that's me. Nice. And like, so running is what? Kiss? No, running's Mary. Yeah, yeah.
You're committed.
I think
to
it's just,
running.
Yeah, because it's part of the DNA.
Yeah,
like, like I said, and I think, like I said, that's the way I would see it.
I love that. So, last few things in closing here. I know we spoke about what happens next. And you said, hey, you don't know, you know, you're open, you're really appreciative of being present in the moment. What I'm curious to know, how can, while you have the space, all right, how can I and the listeners help you as you transition to that next thing?
What I was saying before, it's just the community is paramount. Like, these people, you know, I ride for all of them. You know, we're all kind of been on this journey together. So, like I said, it's like going to war together. You know, you just see, you know, I use that word lightly, preferably, mm-hmm. because obviously we have many service members within our team and our community. But,
and
you know,
we're just navigating through active war.
We're just highs and lows of what this journey brings, you know, right. And we're, you know. We've seen each other at our best and maybe at our worst, and you know, everywhere in between.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's a touchstone of, like, you know, empathy and, you know, good understanding and just, you know, EQ from all of us. But I'm just trying to, I think, like I said, move forward. And I think it's just like that's the beauty of this experience and this program, is that you can't really, like we were saying before about ceding control, like, you can't be too beholden to things, you know, like, you got to just kind of flow with it to some degree too. And I think that's one of the things I'm really happy and smitten with the experience, since it's kind of taken me and the currents have kind of, you know, ushered me to different places, literally and figuratively, that I didn't think I would be. And I think that's the whole point of it, you know, things mm-hmm. we learn about ourselves, but things we learn in the process. And, you know, I would only ask that, like, you know, let's just continue to, you know, intentionally kind of, you know, learn and put ourselves out there collectively, you know?
Last question. As people hope to continually learn and put themselves out there and connect with you in this very intentional way, how can people connect with you? How can they reach you? How can they find you?
I think the very, like, high-key business school answer would be, like, LinkedIn, but, yeah. You know, I'm not, that's fine too. Instagram is probably like my other mode of you know, social pretense, mm-hmm. but I think those are probably the easiest. And then anywhere, you know, from the Eastern Seaboard to the Western Shores. If there's any emerging artists and cool underground shows, I'm usually there too.
All right. And then last, not really a question, but is there anything that you want to share with the space, share with the community, before we wrap up?
I just, you know, I'm totally grateful for this time. I want to say thank you for having me and allowing me to, you know, I guess, share my story, you know, for whatever it's worth to people to kind of, you know, use as an understanding and a touchstone of, like, you know, maybe how they can, you know, utilize that as some sort of understanding to, you know, go forth and make sense of this crazy world.
All right.
But also just happy to, happy and bittersweetly sad that we're going to be shutting down the experience yeah. together in Darden.
Yeah, at Darden. But the experience.
But life will go on.
Goes on and continues to improve and build. So I'm happy we have this time. As I said in the beginning, Thank you for coming here, sharing part of your story, helping this community expand their perspective, and extremely grateful to know you. And if there's anything I could ever do, we could ever do to help you as you progress, not only to that next thing, but that ultimate thing, you know where to find us. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right.